Eye on the Illini, the podcast series brought to you by IlliniGuys.com. And we've got a really special guest tonight. Anybody who knows anything about Illinois football is going to know this name. And Illini guy Larry here, Illini guy Mike. And we've been looking forward to this here for a couple of weeks since we first reached out to him. And joining us here on the podcast, he is a rarity, four-time All Big Ten performer for the Fighting Illini. Let that sink in for a moment. Number 12 in your hearts, number one on this podcast, none other than Craig Swoop. Craig, how are you?
Doing great. Doing great.
How's that for an introduction? Did I call you out?
Yeah, you did. Great job. I've never been introduced like that. What introduction?
And we tried, we really did try to research and figure out how many people have been four-time All Big Ten. We're still doing the research. We can't imagine very many people are four-time All Big Ten football players. What an accomplishment. And when you know, signed that letter to come to University of Illinois, did it occur to you that you would be a four-time All-Conference player in the illustrious Big Ten Conference?
Not at all. My only wish was to just be on the team, try to play some role, hopefully get in a little playing time as a freshman, learn the ropes. They said I had might be a possibility of me of playing if I played up to my capabilities and things fell into place. It might could happen, I had a chance, but I never knew anything like that. I didn't think it would be like that. It was great to come in and for them to believe in me. I really appreciated that. And though, but never, I never thought in my wildest dream I'd come in and be 4 years All Big Ten. No, I never thought of that.
Yeah, that's, Mike brings up a good point, because these days, I think if there's a kid that's a two-time All-Conference, he's gone after year three. So Right. That's a distinction that will be very, very rare as we move forward, and certainly in these past recent years. I've always wanted to ask you, how does a young man, talented athlete from Westwood High School in Fort Pierce, which has produced a number of fantastic athletes over the years, how does a kid like that wind up in Champaign playing for the Illini? Take us back to when you were in high school and the decision to come play for Illinois.
Oh, it was a wild dream. My wish as a kid, I always wanted to play for Michigan. That was wild. And I remember watching Michigan and Illinois play in 81, I think there was. And Illinois beat Michigan 28-7, I think, at halftime. And Michigan came back and beat Illinois like 72-28, I think, or something like that. And I was raging. I said, man, I'd never go to that school. But when I took my visit and I went to Michigan, I didn't like Bo Schembechler. He wasn't what I thought he was. When I went there on my recruit trip, I was kind of turned off by him. And Mike White was a great salesman. And in actuality, they were the only team really gave me a chance to start. Having a chance to start my freshman year, most schools told me I would have the red shirt or sit behind and play behind somewhere else. Ohio State, I was considered, Miami, and Michigan. They all told me I would have to play behind someone else. Illinois was the only school that really offered me a chance. I had a chance if I proved myself that I could play my freshman year. And fortunately, it happened. And so I chose Illinois because of Mike White and the chance that I had a chance to play. And I always wanted to travel as a kid. And I never did too much traveling as a kid. My parents from Mississippi. Only place we went back to Mississippi to my parents' hometown. So as a kid, I always wanted to get out and see other places. And I said, I'm going to leave Florida to go to college. And so I wanted to go somewhere different. And everyone said, well, you're going to the cold. It's cold. I know I'm from Florida. And we play at night and it's 80 degrees and playing at nighttime in the summer, during school year. And it's going to be different. I say, well, I'll adjust. What an adjustment. But, I'm glad I wouldn't choose it any other way. If I had to do it all over again, I'm glad I made that decision and I made the right decision, because we even beat Michigan for the Big Ten champion. So I got a little bit of payback.
That's right. That's right. Okay, I've got a couple of questions that come out of that. Number one, I have to ask, what was it about Bo Schembechler that turned you off?
His arrogance, I think. Because always though he had, those who stay will be champions. And he was just, I mean, it was such a, he was kind of arrogant to me. I just didn't like, it was just something that turned me off. And it kind of hurt because I told Anthony, the guy that showed me around on my recruiting trip was Anthony Carter. And we played against each other in high school because he went to Suncoast in Riviera Beach in Florida. Right. So we played against each other. And I told him, I said, man, I've been wanting to come to Michigan. I'm coming back. And then when I told him I wasn't coming back, he was kind of disappointed. I'm like, man, Bo, I just didn't, I wasn't feeling Bo.
And then the second thing, you're exactly right, considering that your family's from Mississippi and you grew up in South Florida, you're right. And even in November, it's still, you know, thick, especially at Fort Pierce, all along the coast. That's right. You know, Port St. Lucie, all those.
Right. Yes, indeed.
You and I have talked. I spent a little bit of time down there during my career down in West Palm Beach. What was that like when you got into November, your freshman year in the Big Ten, and you experienced that kind of weather trying to go out and play on Saturday afternoons?
Oh, I remember in practice one time, it was cold. It was raining. It was like sleet. It was raining and freezing. And I was in practice and I was standing there and we were running play with scrimmage. And I was just standing there, and Coach Solid, the defensive back coach, went to yelling and screaming at me, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm cold. I can't. I was so cold. And then the next day, they had me in so much clothing, then I couldn't hardly move. So I had to take off some of the gear so I could move. And then I finally got enough clothing on. I took off, I had about, got down to about two or three layers. That was good enough for me to move.
You didn't learn the tricks there, Craig. Growing up in Muhammad, we used to have this one defensive tackle. He was large because his nickname was Orca. Uh-huh. Anytime we had a windy, sleety day in practice, if I was sitting out or wasn't doing something, I'd stand between him and the wind. And it was the greatest thing I ever saw because he could shelter me.
That was about the roughest thing. Playing against the competition was pretty tough, but that weather, that was probably my biggest challenge. And by the time I was a senior, junior, I was playing in short sleeves.
So let me ask you a question, because you were a freshman, and you guys got to a bowl against Alabama.
Yeah.
What was it like knowing that it was Bear Bryant's last game? Did you have any idea how big that was, that you would be there for that?
I had a kind of idea how big it was because it was Bear Bryant. It was Coach Bryant, and he was bigger than life. I mean, the security he had around him when we played or did a function together, I mean, a state trooper that would be around him and nobody around Coach White. But I mean, you just knew, you know, he was a legend at his own, and you know, so much respect for him. We knew what we was playing, what we was facing, you know, and it was an honor to play against him. I mean, we wanted to beat him. We played a great game, and I think that kind of propelled us into that next year, because that game kind of gave us a real taste of big time college football and the physicality, because we saw them in different settings. We were together. How big their necks was, and you know, we know they're lifting weights and they're training. And when we played them, we felt it. But it was a great game, and so we used that. We felt like that's what we needed, to be more physical, to get stronger, and that would help us that following year. We won the Big Ten championship that next year after playing them in the Liberty Bowl. I think that helped us that next year because of the game we played. We was right there with a top 10. SEC school. They were very physical, and we played right, you know, we was right there with them. And so that kind of helped us out that next year. I think that really helped us out.
Yeah, that 1982 Liberty Bowl down in Memphis. And as you said, I believe that was Tony Eason's.
Right.
Yeah, Tony. Is that correct?
Yeah, right,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So the next year you bring in the new quarterback, Jack Trudeau. What was that like, that offseason? Because as you said, you come into this, you're playing for an Illinois program that has not had a lot of success before Mike White got there, but there's everyone knows about the offense, but it's the defense coming through. What was there a point in the preseason or even during the season? You mentioned the Michigan game, of course, and that was huge. The sold out crowd, the stands were rocking, national TV. Was there a point in the season when you felt that this was different? This was much better than last year, and you really had a chance to be a top five team or you know, compete for a national championship?
I know one game we recall as a team, we remember we lost that first game that year to Missouri.
Yep.
In Missouri. And then we came back and we played Stanford, and it was kind of a back and forth game. And I think it was Joe Miles or somebody blocked a punt or something in that game. I mean, we ended up scoring the game and beating Stanford. And we kind of found that was the, I think that game helped us score. We found a way to win. And from that point on, we didn't know, we kind of had this confidence. We didn't know what was going to win by, what the score was going to be, but we figured we would find a way to win a game. Every game, we found different ways to win. And that Stanford game helped because we was playing kind of sluggish, and it was just kind of a dull game. And then Joe blocked the punt. I think Joe Miles blocked the punt, and we scored. And that kind of propelled us because that game was kind of tough going into the end. And we pulled it out, and from that point on, we won the next nine. After that, we went through the Big Ten, started that season, it got rolling. It got going pretty good.
Yeah. And in fact, as I know Mike had talked with you before, that, you know, 9-0, that's the first time that anyone's beaten every single opponent. And I believe still the last time, because a few years later, Penn State comes in, and with the expansion, you don't play all the teams. And so, you know, I mean, how special is that? Not just to win the Big Ten, but to be the first team to beat every other Big Ten opponent in football.
It's a great feeling. I still wear that on my sleeve. I'm proud. That's something I'm very proud of. I tell my kids, I have a grandkid now, grandson is 16. He's going to Central here in Champaign. He's going to Central High School. And I tell him about it. I say, that's something I cherish. I haven't won a national championship. Didn't win a state champ in high school. But that Big Ten championship means something because the way we did it. Nobody else could ever do that or say they did that. So that's something I'm very proud to the day I leave this earth. One of my greatest accomplishments as a player and as a team was that Big Ten championship. That season was far best, my greatest and greatest accomplishment.
what a fall, you know, that fall of 83 with three victories over top 10 teams at home with, you know, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State. What was that like when you had a chance to, I mean, the people forget, you know, you look at that Iowa score, you guys pounded them into the dirt.
Right. We beat them 33-0 and had a goal line stand at the end of that game to shut them out. And that's something we owed them from the year before. We had, it was a pretty close game by freshman year. That was all of them. We owed it Michigan. I feel like we, you know, the Ohio State, we owed them that. And because the year before we had Michigan beat. Down on the goal line, first and 10, first and goal, and we couldn't get it in and four downs. You know, Dwight Beverly got stopped. The Ohio State game, you know, it was close. And so we always was close, but never quite over the hump. And that year, you know, a lot of guys, we kind of wanted to see a lot of guys. You know, there was David Boatwright on the team with a senior, Mike Weingrad, a lot of guys, Ed Brady, those guys, we wanted it for them because they've been there. They were so close years before. And to really help them get over the hump, to beat them, for them to be able to beat Michigan and Ohio State and Iowa, we feel like that was something. We started a trend that, you know, it's a tradition now. It's a dogfight. It's not just Illinois and Michigan or Illinois and Ohio State. It's a rivalry. It became a rivalry. It really felt like it was a rivalry every game, every time we played them.
Mike, I still have my my orange and blue striped Illini shirt with the Rose Bowl decal on it. I can't, doesn't fit anymore, but I still have it. Do you have anything to open that from that year? You remember Abelia?
I tell you, we, for the longest time, I think it's still my mom and dad's place, but I think they have one of those Chief and with the schedule bottles of Pepsi, maybe. I think they still have one of those, but I don't think I'm cracking that one open to take a sip of that. Not after 35 years.
Yeah, I have a Coke. From there, from the Rose Bowl. I have a seat. I still have my Rose Bowl blazer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I have that. And as you can see,
yep.
My hat. It's an old hat still hanging in there that I love and cherish. But I have a few things left from that Rose Bowl that I keep.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge party. We literally had like my best friend, he had a big basement so they could banish all of us high school football players down in the basement. And then the adults could be upstairs. And so we had massive vats of chili and we got together to watch the UCLA game and things went awry.
I still remember that game, guys, starting out and Illinois 10-1, UCLA 6-4-1. Like, oh, we got this. We got this. We got this. I got my shirt on. I got my Coke. I got my Coca-Cola. I got my chips out. And then, Craig, what happened?
Oh man, I still feel bad about that. My wife Angie has her screensaver, has a picture of me when I first picked that ball up and I'm pointing. She'd say, "That's a great picture, honey." I'd say, "But sweetie, you don't realize what happened after that. That was the worst play, the worst moment in my life. That's the worst moment in my life." I'm like, "But," she said, "but I love the picture." I said, "But sweet, that's the worst picture in my life. Well, you don't know what happened after that pointed, after that picture. You took that nice picture, what happened?" She said, "I was there, I remember." I said, "Yeah, you remember, I fumbled the ball." She said, "Yeah, but you know, Mike made me feel great the other day. Mike, you really made me feel good. You said it was at the beginning of the game. We still had a lot of games left. So yeah, I don't feel as bad, but I that's the worst play. I felt so bad because I felt like I let him down. I just feel like if that wouldn't have happened, what might have happened? What could have happened? If I hadn't done that, I feel not bad for me. I felt so bad for my teammates, my friends on the team. I felt so bad because I kind of felt like I let them down, and I never ever wanted to do that. And they told me, they've told me I didn't let them down because, you know, I helped get them there. They felt I was a big part of getting them there, but I still feel in my heart that I kind of some way let them down, and I kind of take that. I took that on, you know, I take that. That's on me.
I still remember sitting there. We're like, it's six. And we're like touched. And then all of a sudden it's like, huh? And everybody just went dead. But I will tell you, the interesting thing is after coaching for years in AAU basketball and all the things that I've been associated with, I still go back to, you had 58 minutes left in the game. There, I mean, as much as that was definitely a rough play, there's no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not like, if you go back to that same rough era, it's not like Jackie Smith dropping that pass in the end zone for the Cowboys with a minute and a half left and there's no time to make it up.
Yeah, right.
Or we talked to Bruce Douglas last week and Bruce talked about that travel play
with
Vicky Beal, you know.
Right.
And he's and even then they had a little bit of time, but not much.
Right.
And as much as this was, you know, I do tend to agree with you. That play goes well. We probably go up, you know, the line I go up 7-0 and probably don't ever look back.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is there was plenty of time, you know, to recover. And it was just, it turned into one of those bad days at the office.
It was. And we all, after that game, we were kind of all in shock. I mean, we all were like looking around like, man, did we play that bad? We couldn't believe we played like that. It was kind of shocking everyone. It was just kind of shocking locker room ethic. We were like, wow, man, it was such a letdown, you know?
But it was such a magic season that it was a letdown. I can tell you from the people that I know in Central Illinois, obviously 2001 was a great year when you go to the Sugar Bowl. You had the 2007 team that went to the Rose Bowl.
Right.
As good as those years were, I've never heard anybody compare it to 1983. That's kind of the pinnacle. And then when you think about what you guys were building on the football side and what was being built on the basketball side, how much interaction did you guys as football and basketball players, did you guys have a lot of interaction between the two teams as you guys were building this juggernaut?
Oh yeah. Cause I was good friend with Scott Mitz, Harp, Jay Daniel, D, can't remember D last name.
Maris,
yes. I was friends with all those guys. We used to play when, obviously, we always played in MP because I played high school basketball back then. I used to play against Richard Redford, who went to Michigan and played for Michigan. We used to play against each other in high school. I played against Jay Daniel. I played against Harp. Harp went to North Shore, and we played against each other in high school. So it was great. You know, they was doing well. Effing Winters, George Montgomery, Bruce, Doug Albert. Yeah, we hung out with those guys, and we had a thing like, you know, we was doing well in football. We was rooting for them because we wanted to see them do well. And that way, the whole program, you know, was uplifting everybody. We was hoping that it affected and they carry over to everyone, every sport. Because we, you know, we're all athletes. We all, you know, one family at the University of Illinois. So we want to see everybody do well. And that's what we thought. And we got along great with the basketball players. I mean, there was a lot of great guys, and I've got to see a lot of great basketball.
Yeah, that was quite an era for Illinois athletics.
Yeah, and even after with the Flying Illini, Nick and Kendall Gill and Battle. I mean, those guys. Lowell Hamilton. Lowell was there my senior year. Lowell was a great friend of mine, Lowell Hamilton. Great guys and great basketball. I enjoyed that era so much. That 80s, 90s era, oh, was some great basketball. I loved it. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
It was really special. Yeah, having, and as Mike has talked before and other podcasts, just that was a time that we haven't seen really since the 80s, having football and basketball both be consistently in the top 10, top 20. I do want to ask you one more question about the Rose Bowl. New Year's Day 84, I've always felt that maybe it was one of those situations where nobody on the program had experienced this kind of success before, and you kind of went in and with all the pomp and circumstance, and there is, I don't know if there's, I mean, nowadays, I mean, even the most minor bowls have all kinds of stuff going on, but this is the Rose Bowl. It's a really big deal. Did you feel that maybe collectively that the guys kind of got caught up in the pageantry of it, and before you realize it, because UCLA, it's their home turf. I mean, you know, right. I mean their home stadium. You know, you know, you're literally playing on their home field. Did you feel that kind of played into what happened on the field between the lines?
We didn't want to use that as an excuse, but we when we first got to California, went to the Playboy Mansion. You have invited us to the Playboy Mansion. That's the first thing we did. We got there.
That's not distracting at all.
We was there 2 weeks. I mean, how many teams? We went out there on the 19th. We didn't play till the 2nd, January the 2nd. So most teams, nobody had ever, I don't think, had been out there that long, had ever done that. We stayed 1 week in Newport Beach, and then the 2nd week we moved to wherever the Big Ten champion team stayed. We moved to, I can't remember the name of the place, but we moved there where the Big Ten champions stayed. That next week, we moved to a different hotel. And we was having parties the week of the game. And we didn't even have a curfew that first week.
Oh.
First week we was there, we didn't have curfew.
This is revealing.
Yes, I mean, a lot of stuff come out now that
some pieces start to come together for me right now.
Yeah, but me as a player, I wouldn't use that as an excuse. But we enjoyed ourselves. It was our first time. Did they go? I don't think. I mean, we enjoyed it as kids. You had fun. You just thought it was great to be in that atmosphere. You just thought that was the greatest thing in the world, what was going on and how they was treating us. I mean, man, who don't want to be treated like that? Who wouldn't want to be treated like that? So we enjoyed it. We stuck it in. Might have took in too much, but I don't want to use that as an excuse.
I think what you're saying is kind of what I felt all along. And we're all now in our, you know, in our 50s. So we see life differently now than we all did. We were 19, 20 years old. Yeah, it's just different. I think that, you know, I always felt that, you know, it you didn't know how to treat it like a business trip. Definitely. because you never experienced that. Right. And the fact you're there for an extra week, you know, right. I mean, you're on top of the world. You guys are playing world beaters. You just wiped the first team ever to wipe out the entire Big Ten. No one had done that. And so I think it's understandable not to use it as an excuse. But if you're out there, you know, like you said, being treated like royalty for 2 weeks, I would think it's hard to have a bunch of 19, 20, 21 year old young men and to then all of a sudden turn that off and say, no, okay, well, hang on, it's a business trip.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, been, 30 days, 40, whatever many days it was in between from the last game to that, because we was playing great. I mean, we was playing great football and a great rhythm. And then to be off that long, I'm pretty sure it had some kind of effect. Because a lot of, I remember some of the guys saying if we would have played them at a normal game, like a week off, like we usually play, I don't think they would have stayed on the field with us. That's how a lot of guys felt. And so you can always second guess. But looking back and being older and a little wiser, yeah, you look, that did take it wear and tear. It does, looking back on it, because we was out late partying, different things. And it has its effect on it. But, being 19, like you said, 21, you don't think it do, but it does. It really does, looking back. And once I got to the professional level, I see how you need your rest and how things matter. It made a difference. It really did. I mean, looking back.
I will say this. I have said this for, we're talking 37 years since then, that you guys made Rick Neuheisel a lot of money.
Yeah. Didn't we?
Rick Neuheisel today is still cashing in on those 3 hours.
Yeah,
I was right. Yeah. I mean, he keeps popping up and I'm like, my son's like, who is that? I go, let me tell you who that is. Let me tell you why he's there. I said, there was one game. It was one game.
One game. We made his life change.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If I was 19 and out there for 2 weeks, they would have put an APB that I was missing at the Playboy Mansion. They'd have to send out a search party. So, I mean, the bottom line is it's amazing when you think of how focused kids have to be in a relatively mature situation to pull this off. Cause I don't think I would have done very well. Just myself.
It was great. It was, I would say it was wow. The wow factor. It was great. Just the wildest dream.
I kind of went back for a moment, but I do want to continue with what Mike was talking about and you knowing a lot of the basketball players, you guys all hanging out together. And Mike mentioned, that Bruce Douglas was on Eye on the Illini recently and was talking about, the Elite Eight game at Kentucky and the issue with that. Did you guys ever spend any time, you and Bruce, or you and some of the basketball players, or the basketball players and football players, talking about how the two teams collectively had gotten right there and then suffered in some ways kind of a similar fate there at the peak? Did you guys ever talk about that?
Never really mentioned it. I know seeing Bruce around, I guess they never really brought up, the game. I guess they kind of knew it had been, playing in sports and been in that atmosphere. They kind of know the things that goes on and know how things are. So we never really brought those topics up. We kind of just let those go. Whatever happened. We can just, put it behind and move on, and let's keep trying to, do great and better things. And I think we did a good job of trying to do that, to forget it and try to move on, because it was tough. I mean, after that loss, and then the guys, every now and then he would bring up that, they wished and they always hoped that, things was different. I wish they could have turned out different. But, we always realize that's the way things happen in sports. That's what makes sports so great. You don't know the outcome, and you play till there's 4-0s at the end of the clock. And in between those zeros, the time starting those 4-0s, anything can happen in between the lines. So, you kind of learn to accept it and deal with it. Yes.
What was Mike White like? When I think about the history of Illinois football, I would dare say, as someone from the outside who spent some time around the program during my years in Champaign, that he probably is maybe fair enough to say the most charismatic coach the program's had in the last 50 years. Would that be fair?
Yes. Great salesman, great motivator. I think I had a lot of respect for him. Me personally, the way my relationship with him and the way he treated me, the things I went through and some of the situation with my ordeal that I went through, he was right there for me every step of the way, always had my best interest at heart. And so I have a very high regard for Coach White. I love him as a man and as a coach. That's how I feel about Coach White. I have the greatest respect for him. And I love him dearly as a coach. And yes, charismatic, he definitely was. He could sell you a rock. He could sell you a pile of dirt, man. I mean, he was a great salesman. And my mom and dad was pretty tough at the project in Fort Pierce. And when he came there, they loved him. My mom, they fell in love with, you know. He was a great salesman, a great coach. Yeah, he had great charisma. He was charismatic. He was.
And I don't want to take anything away from John Makovic. I know he had great success following that, but we now have someone in play, and I know Mike, we want to talk about this too, and Brett Bielema. And it feels like it again. You know, I say this, I'm not trying to denigrate the hard work of all the people in the program that have come along since those years. But it feels like there's an energy now around the program that perhaps hasn't been there since the White and Makovic eras ended in the early 90s. You mentioned you live in Champaign now. Do you sense that as someone who's been a part of this program your whole life and still remains tied in?
I'm starting to feel that. I'm starting to feel like there's some, you know, they might have some special going on over there. I feel like it might be getting that fighting the line not back again, that mojo we had. I feel like he's on the right track. For some reason, I think he's doing the right things. I went to the spring game. I was there. Watched about three quarters. But I just like the energy that he has and the things that he's doing, the way he's going about it. I like it. I mean, I'm hearing from other guys. We got a Marco Polo with some other fighting the Illini, a lot of guys, different era, and they're liking it too. They're talking positive. Guys talking about coming back to the game, that first game, and so I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I can't wait to get it going. And I told him if there's anything I can do, I'm here. If you can use me in any way, or if I can be of any service, not doing anything, I'm retired, and I can't wait. I'm looking forward to the season. I'm back in town, and I'm gonna be at every game.
The team could have used the old number 12 the last few years. we'd have had somebody out there hitting like you did. That'd have been a big assist.
I'm broken up from all that hit. I've had some years ago. I've had back surgery, and I've had both hips total replacement.
Both.
So I got a lot of titanium in. But, you know, I still get around. I move pretty good. You know, I get out and walk, you know, 5 or 6 miles a day. So I'm still living and getting around. But, yeah, I enjoy those days. And the only football I play now is on John Madden on the PlayStation.
Who's your team? That's a much safer way to play.
I usually play with most – I'm a Jacksonville Jaguar. But since Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl last year, I was playing with Tampa since Tampa drafted me. They happen to have Tom Brady.
And isn't that where you played? Is there a number, you know, I can't remember what number you wore in the pros.
I was 41 at Tampa.
Okay.
And then I was 26 with the Colts. Yeah.
Yep. So in the NFL, what was the highlight there? And I know the injuries obviously cut short the career. Any big moments that come to mind when you were in the NFL?
To me, as a kid growing up and watching the NFL, my greatest moment was to play against Walter Payton.
Okay, great.
I was the great, and you know, I tackled him, and we helped each other up, and he said, "Great job," and he was just so nice about it. But then he came and ran me over the next play. he was so nice, but he was the toughest guy on the. That's the toughest player I've ever played against. That would be, if anybody asked me who the toughest player I ever played up against in any level of sports, Pop Warner, high school, college pro, Walter Payton was a rock. he was tough.
I was gonna say, what made him so, I mean, it seemed the determination. He just was determined, one, you weren't gonna bring him down, or you were gonna pay the price if you did. Is that fair?
He was so strong for him. He was 5'9", what, 185, maybe a 90 pounds at the most. You would have swore he weighed 400 pounds when you tried to tackle him or hit him. He was so determined. And he didn't run out of bounds. And our coach, I remember defensive back coach in Troy always said, do not loosen up when Walter gets to the side. Make sure you stay tight. Because he's not running out of bounds. He's coming back. And that's when you see, if you run towards the sideline, you don't relax. You tighten up because he's coming back to the field. He's not running out of bounds. And so if you loosen up, you might be on the highlight field.
Now, I don't. The ones they show now, of course, he's been you know gone since '99, and he left us. But I haven't seen you on any of the most popular highlight films. And my question is, did he ever get you with that forearm? You know, he had that stiff arm that if you're not careful, you might lose a vertebrae.
That's what he got. He made it so bad. This is what I don't understand. He hit me one time with that, and I end up with turf toe.
That's a hit.
He hit me so hard, my foot was hurt. I injured my foot. I'm like, how did that happen? He ran me over, but my foot. You know, I don't understand that till today. That was a terrible. He was just, oh man, it was great. I mean, and I'm not ashamed to talk about that, because I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one he ran over or stiffed up.
But that's something for you when you get hit you get stiff armed in the neck. Yeah. And limp away with a toe injury. You know that's a vicious weapon.
He was so vicious running the ball. I mean, you didn't think a guy that small would beat that. Man, he packed a punch. Oof.
He
made me feel like I was running the ball when I was tackling him. I'm like, don't I supposed to make him, you know, don't he supposed to hurt? Yeah, it was that kind of way, boy. He was great. It was great. That was Ida, and I got to put. I think that was my highlight. And the other one was probably playing on the same team with Erie Dickerson, playing with the coach, and then to get to watch him. I think those were probably my two favorite running backs. Probably Walter, the first number one, and then Eric. Eric was great too. I love watching him run too. He was great to play with. Great guy.
Great player, but different skill set. And I think because he was, came just after Walter, maybe that's lost a little bit.
Right. Yeah, because I remember Walter them beating them in the playoff that one year when they won the Super Bowl. They beat the Rams with Eric, and they shut Eric down. And then I think that's when the trade rumors started. The nation became. I got here the week after he got to the coach. That trade, and I came from Tampa the week after, and I was there the 2 years ago. We went to the playoff that year, and we lost to Cleveland in the playoff. So that was great. But just like I say, playing against Walter Payton. And playing with Erie Dickerson, probably my biggest moments in the NFL, because I always looked up to Walter Payton and watched, always admired him from afar. And then to get to play him, talk with him, shake his hand, and for him to even run me over. I don't tell that too much. Even I got ran over by Walter Payton. I'm proud to say that.
and now we finally understand that rash of turf toe in the late 70s and early 80s.
That's right.
That's a great, man.
Well, I tell you, this has been a great trip down memory lane, Craig, and we really appreciate you taking some time to come and talk to us. Is there anything that we didn't ask you about, or anything that you want to talk about that we didn't hit before we wrap up?
No, just know that let's get back on that bandwagon. Let's get our mojo back. Let's get going. Let's get back in the stands and let's root our fighting the line now on. And let's get this thing cranked back up to, winning again. Let's get some success and at least have some fun. Enjoy yourself. That's all I want the kids to do, and give their all. As long as they're doing that and putting out a good product, giving their all, that's all you can ask for, whatever happens after that. We'll deal with that. But I just want these kids to enjoy themselves, have the fun, and enjoy the great experience at a great university and enjoy. It's a great time, and it's so much fun. So I just hope they get to enjoy it and have as much fun as I did.
Perfect. Well,
you look fantastic. It's too bad about the, some of the surgeries, because I really do think you can get out there and kind of show these kids a thing or two about how to how to hit somebody. If I'm sure that the coaching staff knows, if not, when we run into them, we'll make sure they know that you're around, because I think that I have no doubt. I think Mike would agree that you'd be very inspirational to go in and and talk to these young players and to connect this era with that era, because you were always a favorite of ours. Like I said, when Mike told me he reached out to you, I was so excited. I said, man, I can't wait to talk to this guy, you know, because
I believe, and I'm seeing you, and I remember watching you on TV or seeing, you know, man, that's Lashman. Oh, okay. I heard the name, but I couldn't quite. I'm like, I know he said CNN. I'm like, man, I kind of know because I watch CNN all the time. And I'm like, and then when I see you come off, I said, yeah, that's him. I'm like, and it's an honor. And I like to say, if there's anything you all got doing, anything I can help you all with, any functions or chat, anything, call me. You have my number. You got to know how to get in contact. Anything, man. I'm just here. I'm just trying to help do something. I don't have anything to do, but I'd like to be help, do what I can. I did a lot of help, you know. I worked with the Boys and Girls Club and different organizations with kids. So I don't mind doing anything. I told my wife once I get squared away right here, and I'm pretty squared away now, that I find something to do, some charity work, or find somebody I can do, or maybe mentor somebody or do something. I find something to do. Hope somebody can use me.
Well, we will definitely be in touch. And by the way, you just made my week.
Well, thanks, man. It's the same here. It's great to meet you. And it's an honor, man. It is, you know, I can tell people I don't know money. Last meal, yeah. You see, you're famous to me, you know, and, you know, it's great, man. That's great. And thank you so much. And it's nice to meet you, really. Great. My pleasure.
I appreciate that. Well, Micah, I mean, Craig has left me speechless. You want to wrap things up?
Yeah. I'll wrap things up. We're going to go to the non-famous guy. We'll let Mr. Anonymous wrap up the show here.
You put it together, man. You're famous. You got us together.
Shoot. But so this is this episode of Illini Guys. We're doing Eye on the Illini. We've had on Craig Swope, a fantastic guest. Obviously, we try to do Illini legends all the time. We've been very fortunate. We've had Marcus Liberty on. We've had Kenny Battle, Bruce Douglas. Obviously, with Craig, he'll help us get connected to a few more of the football legends of the past, and we will find a way to have them on as well. And, of course, we want to finish with the tagline that everybody's used to hearing, but whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, whether you live halfway across the United States or halfway across the world, IlliniGuys.com is the only way to stay in the know. Thanks, everybody.